From bound feet to holding up half the sky, the position of women in China has varied drastically through history and continues to grow and change. The Confucius Institute at the University of Adelaide is this week hosting Women in China Week, bringing together influential voices to celebrate and discuss women in the China-Australia space. The Wire's Judith Peppard spoke to the University of Adelaide's Professor Kay Schaefer about the position of women in China, first asking how feminism in China differs to feminism in the West.
Oh, it varies. There is not an organized movement. In China, there is a government agency that's charged with addressing problems that women face. That agency is called the All Women's China Organization. It purports to speak for all women. But what it does is it puts out policy statements about ideal modes of addressing women's issues and has an influence all the way down to the village level. So in that sense, it does have the potential to change women's lives. But in practice, it tends to produce a state discourse that's about women's self-respect, women's dignity. So in the face of, for example, a very major problem facing China today, which is the so-called floating population, which all able-bodied people who live in villages in China are by and large seeking employment in the cities because there is no employment in the villages. And these mainly, the women's organization does have an interest in what happens to the women when they come into the cities. But the interest is by way of preserving the state's reputation as a kind of custodian of the people rather than actually addressing what happens to these women who tend to be very young, very inexperienced, very uneducated, who have really no capital except their bodies. And so very often they are hired at the lowest rung, which would be bar girls, masseuses, receptionists, and often their jobs entail sexual services. Well, the government, All China Women's Policy, would want to draw women's attention to the importance of self-respect, of developing a sense of dignity in the cities.
So it doesn't really take into account the economic needs of the women in these situations, the reasons they've left their village in the first place, and what they're exposed to when they arrive.
That's right.
So it's more about telling women to keep themselves nice.
That's right, because otherwise the government's image will be tarnished if it became known the degree of exploitation and vulnerability that these women face as a means of day-to-day survival. But of course, the state is not the only speaker. And now we've got a market economy that wants to sell products to women who have money. And we've got a public culture via the internet of women speaking back, one might say speaking back to power, but in a very cautious way.
Yes.
We've got academics and NGOs who are very much interested in the lives and the issues of discrimination in terms of gender equality. So there are many contending forces now trying to remold a rapidly changing culture and address some of the vast disparities between men and women, between rural and urban populations, the rich and the poor, the educated and the uneducated. And the women's voices from the countryside are beginning to be heard, but in a whisper, only in a whisper.
So what happened to Women Hold Up Half the Sky?
It was a noble socialist principle that I think we in the West were in admiration of. And in fact, during socialism, women probably had more power and influence in China than they have today as a whole, because they were educated, because they had jobs, because they were expected to take part in public life. They sacrificed a great deal in terms of family life, in terms of motherhood, in terms of being able to make choices about what their life would become, and certainly in charge of their femininity, because all men and women were modeled as androgynous citizens of the state. But in terms of their experience as workers and their participation in public life, it was much greater than the opportunities for women today, at least for the majority of women today.
But as Professor Schaefer points out, the experiences of women in China are varied. Westpac private banker Ida Wong Taylor is on the Confucius Institute's VIP Women in China panel.
What you see now back home in China, what you see now is the one-child policy is coming through. And in the Generation X and the Generation XY, the statistics already say that half of the world's self-made female billionaires are Chinese. And in fact, in terms of female business senior leaders in China, leads Australia by 25 to 22%. The post-Mao Chinese women are not shy to be financially successful also and run their own business.
Flavia Watkins of the Confucius Institute at the University of Adelaide says it's important for women to support each other in the China space, which was one of the inspirations behind Women in China Week.
As women, we might face certain challenges working in the China space that men don't. And so I just kind of think that women should start sharing their secrets a bit and, you know, joining together and being a support network and just really inspiring a conversation.
Flavia Watkins from the Confucius Institute at the University of Adelaide, ending that report by Judith Peppard and Tegan Farrell. For more information on Women in China Week, which has events running today and tomorrow, head to confucius.adelaide.edu.au.